and it's just about 12 noon. The show is live and local. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the program today, one of the most honored quartets in America presently, the Pacifica Quartet, who happened to be the string quartet in residence at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. And they're with us live in our studio to preview their recital tomorrow night at the Krannert Center in Urbana. That's at 7:30 tomorrow night. And they're with us to play some excerpts from it live and chat with us about their careers and collective career, and also about string quartet playing in general. It's live and local. Stay tuned to FM 90.9. That was music by Domenico Scarlatti, played here by pianist Andras Schiff on Live and Local, one of his, I don't know how many sonatas he wrote, but it certainly seems like hundreds of them, and a bunch of them on that recording, wonderfully played by Andras Schiff, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. My guests on the show today are, it's really going to be a treat. It is a treat to have them, and I think it's going to be a treat for you to hear them, but the Pacifica Quartet. And if you are in Champaign-Urbana and have anything to do with the University of Illinois and happen to like chamber music at all, or even if you just like classical music, chances are you know who they are. If any of these things are peripheral to you, well, then I'm going to suggest that you will, after hearing them on the show live today, you might well want to go hear them really live in recital tomorrow at the Krannert Center. They're going to be playing at 7:30 in Urbana, a program that includes, we'll let you know as the show goes on what it includes, because they're going to sample, I think, the three pieces that are on that program with us today. So thank you all for coming in. It's difficult to get you. You're playing everywhere in the world, really, quite literally.
Thanks. It's great to be
here.
Yeah,
it's happy to be here.
And I'm actually very relieved to see, even though I knew this to be true, I'm relieved to see you collectively that you all look pretty normal, and everything is well proportioned and so on, because your heads could very easily be swelled all out of proportion given the number of awards you have had lately and the number of honors and a new position, which sounds like it's a lot of fun at the very least, for this season, assuming the quartet in residence position at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City and taking over from no less than the Guarneri String Quartet, one of the probably greatest quartets of any time, and winning a Grammy last year for Best Chamber Music Performance. Musical America, that musical journal, named its 2009 Ensemble of the Year, and yet here you are actually living in Champaign-Urbana. What do all these things mean?
I don't know, really. I mean, you know, you get an award, and it makes you feel good for a few minutes, and then you realize you have to get up and play at a concert. So, I mean, it's great to be recognized. I think, especially the Musical America, to be recognized by our peers, our colleagues, musical colleagues. But at the end of the day, you still have to rehearse and play and do what we do as a string quartet. And we feel very lucky to be here in Champaign. This is a great university, great town, and we love working with the students. So any quartet that has a home is lucky, and to have a residency and a place to, after a long tour and being on the road, to come to a place that's so comfortable like Champaign is great.
And that was the cellist of the quartet speaking, Brandon Vamos, and I guess I should introduce the rest of you. Samin Ganatra is the first violinist and also happens to be married to Brandon. And Sibby Bernhardsen is the second violinist, and Masumi Per-Rostad is the violist. And the whole quartet in residence thing, you have been quartet in residence in different places. University of Chicago, I think, was one of the early ones, and now the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and continuing at the University of Illinois, and some other places. What does that mean? I mean, you can't obviously reside in all of these places. You actually reside in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah, no, that's actually a very good question. It's sort of, calling a residence is sort of a loose term of any kind of relationship that is more than just one concert. But our residence at Illinois is completely different because this is our home, and we are full-time faculty here, and we teach here, and this is our most, you know, serious residency. And the thing at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, that's more actually a concert series. We present a series of concerts over the year. This year we're doing 3 recitals. The following year we're going to present all the Shostakovich string quartets. And the following year after that we're going to do all the Beethoven quartets. But there's no other really good word except using residency. So even if you go somewhere for 3 days, you call that a residency.
So in the case of the University of Illinois, you were hired first as a quartet to be, you know, as an ensemble to be here, and you also teach individually.
Yeah.
But you were hired as a quartet. I mean, is that
part of the difference? Yes, that's kind of the way quartets work. I mean, if one of us doesn't come, then we can't come because quartets need to rehearse every day and really be together. So we're lucky in that sense. We were all hired together here at the University of Illinois. So we all moved here together and could make our have a teaching career as well as a performing career.
I think things have changed in the field because a lot of schools are looking to have a string quartet in residence. This is something that's been happening a lot in the last, 15, 20 years. And it makes a lot of sense. You have, 4 string players, different instruments that can come in and teach and also work as chamber musicians, coaching chamber music and give concerts. And it's also good to have that quartet who's out there, playing concerts elsewhere to help with, recruiting and
getting
being a representative for the school in a way.
And you actually, I think I've heard that this year you actually brought in a quartet, or the university brought in an existing quartet from elsewhere specifically to work with you guys. I mean, they're students here, but they came as a quartet, which that's unusual for students.
Well, at the university, at the School of Music, we have a graduate string quartet program. String quartets are a very difficult animal, and I'd say maybe 99.9% of string quartets end up quitting somehow because of all the difficulty. So one of our groups quit this fall, but we have another wonderful quartet in residence now, comprised of our graduate students, and it's a very difficult thing. But we try to give them a nurturing environment and give them lots of opportunities and a chance to work, which is what string quartets really need, a place to work.
But isn't this the group that actually came as a quartet? Or is that the one that disbanded?
Yes. That's the one that disbanded.
Oh, really?
They came from New Zealand, and they were a very serious quartet. They've been together for 3 years. And this happens, though. I mean, there can be personal problems. There can be playing issues. There can be having different goals in terms of what you want to do with the quartet. So a lot of young quartets won't survive the first few years, and it's challenging. They're also trying to make a living. We experienced this when we first formed 15 years ago, was that we were not a known entity. We didn't have any concerts. We knew we needed to rehearse 5 hours a day to sound like a quartet and to learn repertoire. So we were very poor for a long time. But one thing that's important, I think, for any young string quartet is to have the same goals and desires. If one person wants to be out there playing 100 concerts, the other person just wants to play occasionally, somebody wants to teach more, it can be problematic. So
The level of commitment has to be the same. And maybe this is one reason why all 4 of us feel very blessed that we've been doing it for so long. We met early on and were friends before we became colleagues. And I think that is important. And we had a certain musical chemistry and we've been together. I mean, the quartet is 16 years old now.
I was going to ask about that, but also particularly how you all came together, which was partly circumstantial and partly not, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I guess for me personally, since I've been a teenager, it's sort of been my dream to find a string quartet and find players. When I was 14, I'm from Los Angeles, and I moved to Minneapolis to go study with Roland and Almina Vamos, who are very famous violin teachers and who also happened to be Brandon's parents. They were teaching there at the time, and Sibby came from Iceland to study with them.
And that was where, sorry?
In Minneapolis.
Okay.
They were. Eventually they went to Oberlin, and we all followed them to Oberlin. But so the 3 of us, Brandon, Sibby, and I, really started playing together since we were teenagers, and a lot at, summer music festivals, things like that. So we already knew there was a chemistry. And then later, when we needed a violist, Sibby luckily had met Masumi at a chamber music festival, Norfolk, and they had kind of randomly been placed in a group together, but knew that it worked well. So Masumi was in New York at the time. We called him, and he moved out to, at the time we were living in Chicago, and joined us.
And that's when you, shortly after, became the quartet in residence at U of C, U of Chicago? Or did that take
But that was actually maybe 2 years.
Yeah, the quartet was already in residence at University of Chicago, and at that time was also at Northwestern. So we actually left Northwestern to come down to Champaign.
That's right.
But and Brandon, that's where your parents are teaching now.
Yeah, they're at Northwestern.
Yeah, right. Northwestern, which was my alma mater, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they weren't there when I was there. But, but that was a whole different set of faculty at that point. Well, I do want to actually follow up in a little bit with your comment earlier, Masumi, about the challenges of being in a string quartet, you know, that besides just which, you know, is everybody going to have the same level of commitment that you talked about. But first, why don't we hear what happens, what things sound like once you actually do have that incredible level of commitment and have put in all the rehearsal and have reached a level that you belong to be the day before performance, which is tomorrow at the Krannert Center. What do you want to start with today?
We're going to start with the first movement of the Haydn Quartet that we'll be playing tomorrow. This is his Opus 64, number 5. Has a nickname called the Lark. And again, this is the first movement.
And will we hear why it's called the Lark?
You may.
Yes. There's a certain bird-like opening.
Yes.
Okay. It's the Pacifica Quartet on Live and Local.
Thank you.
That was the opening movement of a string quartet by Joseph Haydn, nicknamed The Lark, because of that, I guess, because of that nice soaring melody with which the first violin opens things, and it comes back a few times. Played here by live in our studio at on Live and Local by the Pacifica Quartet, who are the string quartet in residence at the University of Illinois. And they're going to be playing that complete quartet, as well as music by Beethoven and Jennifer Higdon on their recital tomorrow night at the Krannert Center in Urbana. It starts at 7:30. And you talked earlier, Masuma, you mentioned in talking about the graduate quartets at the University of Illinois, that for quartets to get together and then stay together is quite a challenge, because playing in a string quartet has a lot of challenges. And you mentioned specifically the level of commitment that needs to be the same for all four players. But what are some of the other challenges that you were referring to or thinking of?
Well, you have to think of a string quartet as a relationship like any other. And in this case, there are four people. So we have very integrated lives. We are on the road many days a year, many, many days a year, when we're not here teaching at Illinois. So we see each other at all hours of the day. We have to rehearse something like 4 to 5 hours every day to maintain our performance schedule and to be ready for it.
That's literally every day, four to 5 hours literally every day.
Yes. So things crop up. You know, there's a lot of, little issues here and there. Someday you might feel a little crabby. You might wake up on the wrong side of the bed, and yet you still have to, you know, show up and rehearse or travel and do all of this. So there are a lot of difficulties in the lifestyle. But in the end, what you have to remember is that we're all here for the music, and that we really love what we do. So it can occasionally be challenging, and I think a lot of people a lot of string quartets have issues with this. It's hard when you're just out of school and you're trying to learn how to deal with all of these challenges. And sometimes, you know, some quartets explode, and sometimes they just sort of implode. That's what I always like to say, because I was in two groups when I was in college, and I tried to you know, start a life in a string quartet or start my own string quartets, and one exploded and one imploded. So
what's the difference?
One was a collection of heated personalities, and one was enough of a deflation by other interests. We all had other gigs, and we all had, you know, separate lives, and it wasn't enough of an interest to pursue the string quartet. So it is very difficult, and I was really glad and to be able to join the Pacifica Quartet, which had already been in existence when I joined, and they had already worked through a lot of the difficulties that come with, you know, starting a string quartet and getting through that initial stage.
So there was a violist before.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sumi joined us in 2000, and we started the quartet in 1994.
Oh, I didn't realize that it had been that long without you.
Yeah.
Well,
actually, he's been longer with us than we were without him. So
that's right.
You know, actually, just to reiterate a little bit what Musum was saying, I mean, it is hard, I think, in the beginning, just because it's actually just hard to become a quartet and sound like a quartet, because you have four different individuals that need to sort of become one brain and come to consensus and work things out and just figure out how to work. But I do want to sort of comment on that. I do find this sort of myth a little bit overrated about how string quartets end up hating each other. And all these stories you hear about these older string quartets that just wouldn't talk to each other and hated each other. And
well, tell me some of these stories, because I actually haven't heard them.
Well, there are these, you know, people say the Budapest quartet didn't talk to each other, the Guarneri's, you know, hated each other, and it's the Amadeus quartet. They're just it. And when I...
This is how myths start, by the way.
Yeah.
Exactly. Let's keep at it. This is going up to like 4,000 people right
and,
now.
And I remember when I, you know, was first playing in the quartet, then, you know, sort of people sort of tongue-in-cheek would always sort of say, oh, well, do you hate them yet? And but the funny thing is just I don't think it's possible to hate the people you play with this kind of music and work so closely with. And you know, we know the Guarneri Quartet. I mean, there's no way they hated each other. I mean, just seeing how they interact.
They actually had great respect for each other. Just being around them, they were very amiable with each other. And, you know, people, there's a documentary about them, and they stay in sometimes different hotels. They take different flights. This is just
practical
reasons. In a quartet, you want to have your individuality to be able to do what you want to do when you need to do it. So,
or teaching schedules could affect when you travel.
Yeah, we travel differently all the time and stay in different hotels and meet at the hall. And this way we have our own life, and then because we do see each other many hours a day. And so I think everybody needs a little bit of space, and the Guarneri were no different. They played together for 40 years, phenomenal quartet. But after a while, you just need to get away and, you know, be with your family and do all those
things. And even just besides that, I think it's just like sort of logistically, on top of trying to deal with the managements and the schedule, just like the logistical figuring out everybody's schedules to even travel together. But anyway, you know, these are little things.
The other thing about a quartet, I think the young quartets don't often realize, is that when you start a quartet, it's like starting a small business. And there are a lot of things that you have to do outside of playing, and that takes a while to learn, you know, what those are and how to handle it. And it's a big responsibility. There's somebody who's dealing with the manager and deciding repertoire, and there's travel plans, and there's, you know, a whole slew of things that you have to worry about outside of just getting prepared and getting to the concert and playing it.
The amount of people you have to correspond with on a daily basis is actually, I didn't expect that at all. There are different presenters, and there are, you know, the different managers. There's like publicity people. There are composers. There are, you know, because of the school responsibilities, you know, our students, the people at school. It's just a lot of people that we have to sort of stay in touch with every single day and be able to communicate with. And that actually surprised me, actually, how much correspondence there goes into this. So there's one thing, us rehearsing, but then it's the whole outside just running the quartet. Even though we do have, you know, people working for us, we do have a manager in Europe and manager here that, you know, take care of the sort of the concert, you know, the contracts and things like that, and we have a publicist. But then on top of that, there's just a lot of things that go into just simply running a smooth.
Every one of those people need
business.
An answer about something on a daily basis. So, yeah. And then with four people, you can't just get an email and respond to it. you have to take it to the quartet a lot of the time and say, is this something we can do? Are you guys okay with this? Because if you're making always, and sometimes we do make individual decisions.
Sort of executive
decisions.
There's
a lot of discussing. Some people don't realize that, you know, a quartet is a group decision, and it's going to take a little bit of time to get back to people. And
is one of you a point person with, say, the management? You know,
we have different jobs in the quartet.
Do you?
We try to, so that we can divvy up responsibility. Yeah.
For example?
Well, Masumi is in contact with our publicist, sort of,
yes.
So he will, if it needs to be, will make sort of an executive decision, you know. I may be the one who talks more frequently to our European manager, for instance, and things like that. So we have certain, or maybe composers, or who sort of kind of arranges what we play when. But then all matters affecting, you know, sort of artistic decisions we have to make as a group, you know, what we're going to play and things like that. But sort of maybe sort of logistical or practical things we divvy up among the quartet just to try to make things more efficient and run more smoothly.
Why don't we hear another piece of music run very smoothly, which is another thing that is going to be on your concert tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
This is the big portion of our program. We're going to play just a movement from it, but this is Beethoven's Opus 130 String Quartet, one of his great string quartets, and we're actually going to play it tomorrow night with the original last movement, which is the Grosse Fuga, and it's not very often performed that way. After the first performance, Beethoven's publisher urged him to rewrite the finale because it's a very forward-looking movement and the audience didn't quite get it at the time. And so the publisher thought that it would be more of a successful piece if he rewrote the finale. Beethoven did this. We don't know why exactly. Maybe for money, for extra money. He ended up, his alternate finale couldn't be more different than the Grosse Fuga. The Grosse Fuga is big and massive and
long.
Thorny, and this alternate finale is very light and almost kind of looking back to earlier times. But we prefer this piece with the Grosse Fuga at the end, which is how we'll play it tomorrow.
And that just means great fugue.
Which
pretty much describes what it is. It's great, meaning it's fantastic. It's great, meaning it's large.
Yes, it's
but, I mean, Beethoven usually, when you listen to Beethoven's symphonies, I think listeners get one effect, impression. But then when you listen to string quartets, particularly the late ones, it's a whole nother composer. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy in these pieces, including this one, was out there.
Mm-hmm. At the very end of his life.
Even now it sounds like he was out there.
Yeah, at the very end of his life, all he was doing was writing string quartets. So these are his most out there works.
Personal.
He just kind of went into his own personal isolation and just wrote string quartets. And this is some pretty far out stuff.
I'm actually trying to remember which quartet you guys played, and the first time I think I heard you, and I was just thinking while you're playing, what was Beethoven thinking? It was just all over the map, but it was a wonderful conglomeration of sounds and effects that you just wouldn't have thought if somebody said who wrote that thing, no way would I've ever guessed Beethoven. I probably would have guessed somebody in the 20th century.
I think a lot of the people, you know, even on his deathbed, somebody came to him and said about one of his late quartets, the audience didn't get it, and, you know, it went over them. And he laughed, and he said, well, you know, I wasn't writing for them. I'm writing for the future. So he was really, you know, he wasn't concerned with money at that point. He knew that he was facing mortality, and he just said, I'm just going to write, you know, the most intimate personal things I can do and experiment and open up what the possibilities.
We're lucky he did that with the string quartet.
Yeah.
So this is one of the last couple?
Yes, this is Opus 130.
Yeah, it's one of the very last pieces that he wrote, and it's just one of the great pieces of music history. So,
Movement?
The first.
Very first movement. It's the Pacifica Quartet, live in our studio here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Wow. Pacifica Quartet here live in our studio on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was the opening movement of Beethoven's Opus 130 Quartet, right?
Yes.
Do I have the number right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to be playing the complete quartet with its original ending of the Grosse Fuge or the Great Fugue tomorrow night, along with the program, as part of a program that includes also Haydn and Jennifer Higdon, whose music we'll sample in just a moment. They're playing at the Krannert Center at 7:30 tomorrow in Urbana. And you know, I've got just an incredible seat in the house here. I have the only seat in the house, as a matter of fact, in our little studio.
We're sitting too.
You're also sitting. That's true. Well, I'm in the house and you're on the stage, except we're right together. And I've seen you guys both sitting out in the Great Hall audience. You know, the main part of the hall. And I've also seen you, because you've done a number of what they call salon concerts, I guess, where people are on stage with you. But I really only had an inkling of just how much endless communication is going on visually between you. Sibby, I think you said earlier, used the analogy of the quartet having a collective brain. And this is like all the little synapses firing constantly where, you know, when I've seen you before, I could tell that, yes, you're communicating, but you're not close enough to see the eyes, actually, where you're constantly looking at each other and I can only guess at what exactly you're looking for at a given moment. But it's kind of a neat position for me to be in right now.
Yeah, well, you know, the Krannert Center has a beautiful sound, but sometimes it's a little hard to see what's going on in a string quartet at a distance. So, yeah, that's totally right.
The lighting is not the best on stage at the Krannert, particularly not the way they've been doing it lately.
But you end up being really far away.
I mean,
you know,
right.
But the sound is beautiful.
It's
one of the best concert halls in the world.
Yeah, that's
we actually we've been lucky to be able to make some of our CDs there. And yeah.
Oh, have you? That's great. You know, I want to ask you something that normally is very private, and maybe you won't agree to this, but you said you rehearse 4 or 5 hours a day as a quartet, which means you're always finding something to fix. Mm-hmm. So you just played that movement, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to perform it tomorrow. You're going to rehearse later today. I think mm-hmm. you're going from here to a rehearsal.
Yeah.
What about that performance would you like to fix?
That's our question.
Yeah.
And can you give us like a few minutes of a peek at how you would go about fixing it?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, that's.
Maybe one of the things that we would just think about, because we're in this space right now, which is a very dry recording studio.
Very dry.
We'd probably just think a little bit in our rehearsal about trying to change to the Krannert Great Hall stage, which means just sort of focusing on maybe a little bit more projection, a little bit maybe of a grander style of playing. But and then, of course, little nitpicky details here and there, but that's...
Yeah, I'm looking
for... Well, I think, you know, what are you going to go rehearse on what stage you're in a piece. You know, when you're first learning a piece, there's more about, you know, where are we phrasing to, what is the character of this section? Mm-hmm. And then as you get closer to a performance, since we have a performance tomorrow, probably we get into more details at the very end. It's sort of like an hourglass. You know, you start off bigger picture and then, you know... narrowing. There's little things, and there might be little ensemble things that we might want to address, mm-hmm. or intonation.
And from just getting some of the characters even more
pronounced,
defined,
yeah.
so that the different sections are clear.
Can you show us an example?
Often, for instance, what we'll do in the day of a concert is we'll have one of the four of us will go out into the audience and just listen, and then we can make sort of maybe last minute adjustments, like, well, for this hall maybe so and so needs to articulate a little bit more, yeah. or you know, this character that we're going for here in this hall, actually we may need to vibrate a little bit more to get this character, or yeah, well, like a place, mm-hmm. maybe we could do the Mercato after C. Yeah.
Sure.
Cause, yeah.
Or even just the opening. I thought that the first two statements, we could have more difference between the first and the second. So I would probably say that in the rehearsal later today. They sound a little too similar to me.
What do you want to do with the second one then?
Maybe a little more of the crescendo.
More reaching up, or, mm-hmm. or just more of the crescendo?
Yeah.
Try that.
Like that.
I don't know if you can understand that, but there's in the first phrase there's two things. It's said a little bit differently the second time, and it's the way he prepares it. The first one and the second one is a reach up. So we discuss how we're gonna, what are the differences in the music, and if it, in terms of harmony, or if he's leaving something up in the air, or if he's closing something off, some things like that. Character things.
Yeah. Well, obviously, the intricate detail with which you work pays off, because I've heard a lot of string quartets, not as many as I would like, but I've never heard a quartet, in my opinion, that is as tight as you guys are, ever. You know, including some super famous ones, you know, and you're probably on your way to being super famous at some point here, and you're getting there. But, for example, I mean, I've heard so many famous string quartets where the first violinist just sounds kind of scrappy and, you know, doesn't seem a part of the rest of the quartet. And just that opening of that Beethoven, which is just a fantastic opening in the first place, like a fantastic invention.
Yeah.
The unity of sound and of execution, to me, is just astounding, what you guys do.
Thank you.
So the communication is incredible.
Keep talking.
Well, I don't have time. You're going to play us another piece, I think.
But, you know, just you raised a question about... rehearsing, and you know, because we do rehearse every day, you know, between 4 and 5 hours, and a lot of it is we have a huge repertoire, so it's just, you know, getting things ready and keeping things in shape. But it's also, we're so lucky, we're blessed with, there's such great music in the repertoire, like this 130, that we're constantly coming back to it and you know, finding new ways, and we often actually, we have found it very important, and great musicians have given us this advice not to fall into this habit of maybe at a concert day just sort of fixing the most, you know, the tricky ensemble spots, or to do touch-ups, but actually, you know, do a little bit of always rehearsing, even if you just discuss two things. It somehow makes you just a tiny bit more alert. And you know, the great pianist Menachem Pressler, who is definitely like that, he has this great analogy. He said, no matter how great the cook is, you have to have fresh ingredients in order for the meal to be good. Mm-hmm. And so there's something to be said about that. And in order just to stay sort of fresh or inspired, or actually sort of be able to be free, you have to, even though you know a piece really well, You can never take that for granted. And even if it's just like a tiny change, like maybe a different bowing or different timing, it affects actually the whole performance because you're just sort of thinking a little bit differently than you were maybe a week ago.
You're maybe a little more aware. I think the most important thing for us in performance is that our senses are heightened. So if somebody wants to do something a little differently one day, that they have that flexibility. And that's why there's a lot of eye contact. There might be a spot where we might have rehearsed it, and Samin might decide she's going to take more time than she did in rehearsal. So if you can get out of your part and say, okay, I'm there with you, and whatever you decide to do, we're going to do it, then that's when special things happen in the performance, when you're really energized to communicate something. And I think the other thing about rehearsing is that the more we've become comfortable with each other over these years, we actually do less talking in rehearsal than we used to, because we sort of understand where a person is headed with something and are able to, you know, instead of discuss that passage for, you know, 3 minutes and go back and forth, we can make these decisions while we're playing. And that's been really special to see that happen over the years.
Or just sort of be, maybe what I feel also is maybe just developing the skill. We know each other's playing so well, so maybe just noticing that somebody is about to do something different than they usually do or things like that. So that's one of the great things, I guess, about rehearsing with the same people that you like every day.
So you're so well rehearsed, and you know the music so well and each other knows.
Well, hopefully.
So well that you can be flexible.
That's exactly right. Yeah, a lot of people think, well, don't over-rehearse or it'll be like, you know, by rote, and you'll just get up and play exactly what you did. But the more we rehearse, the more we discuss things and characters, and then the freedom happens.
Yeah, there's a different type of freedom, you know, that actually opens up.
I'm looking at the clock, and I think you said the other piece you have to play for us is about 6-7 minutes, mm-hmm. right?
So we just
sure. And I want to make sure you have time to do it.
Yeah, sure.
The cavatina?
Yeah, let's do the cavatina.
I think we'll play the cavatina from Beethoven's Opus 130. It's a really special movement, and I believe Beethoven felt that it was one of his favorite movements of all time.
So we're going to leave. Well, we will then leave Jennifer Higdon for
the concert.
Yeah, that was
the
a
concert.
Teaser.
Yeah. Yeah, you really you teased me because I actually wanted to hear it. So
it's a great piece, and she just recently got a Grammy for Best New Composition. So she's a great composer. It's a great piece, and we hope everybody likes it tomorrow.
But now we're going to play the cavatina from Opus 130.
And this is again. I'm lucky. We've got about 7 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that'll
do. We can do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Play it faster than usual. How's that? The Pacifica Quartet on Live and Local. Thank you. Just gorgeous music and a gorgeous performance. And perfectly timed, too. That was the cavatina from Beethoven's Opus 130 string quartet, played live in our studios here at FM 90.9 on Live and Local. The members of the quartet are Simin Ganatra and C.B. Bernhardsen violins, Masumi Per Rostad viola, and Brandon Vamos on the cello. They're giving that complete work and music by Haydn and Jennifer Higdon tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana, and I'm very pleased that you were able to join us here on Live and Local today.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. This is WILL, FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.